Well, I'm following along on my crib sheet here. I think the next item is yours as well, and this is with respect to the investment policy statement.
Yeah, so this is our opportunity to sort of come back to the board following discussion around two specific items that we had recommended for approval in terms of changing the language in the investment policy statement. One was around trustee involvement in due diligence and review activities. And the other, of course, was around the investment authority level of staff. So, first things first, the trustee involvement in the manager review process. In the memo that I put together for this meeting, I talked about the language that was in there prior, the language that we had recommended, and then the current language that we've adjusted to. So, I recommended language last time that frankly, a few folks were not comfortable with. The perception was that we were sort of reducing the level or the likelihood that trustees would or could get involved in the due diligence process, which wasn't the intent. It was simply to try and tighten it up and focus on some areas that I thought were important around governance. And then, I spoke to the three most vocal trustees offline, and one of them, in fact, suggested that this additional new language, which, this is definitely not a hill that I am going to die on, by the way. So I am happy to follow the trustees' lead here. And it puts it back in a place where, it's very clear that staff will come to you, tell you when there's activity going on, and invite you along or make it available for you to come and join should you want to. So, that's where we are. And I'll just read the language that was suggested. The CIO shall query the board members as to their interest in participating in the due diligence process and shall include any board member expressing such interest. And that will be in two places in the policy around initial due diligence and manager review. So,
So let me jump in and add a point on this item because I was one of the folks that you talked to following the last meeting, and it's with respect to trustee involvement. So I just want real clarity on this point, and that's trustee involvement in the due diligence process. The when we shifted away from the prior paradigm of the board picking from three or four finalists on recommendations of our consultant and move to the system we have now, which everybody I think fully embraces, which is that our investment office, our CIO, are in the professional business of picking managers, not us. There's still an opportunity for board members to observe, not actively participate in the context of being part of the sausage being made, but rather observe how it's being made, understanding the fundamentals. And I think it's that latter point that this change was intended to get at, which is that the board members are welcome to attend the due diligence meetings, but we do need to understand our role, and the role of a board member is to observe the process, not to be a participatory element in the substantive review of whether a manager meets the criteria that's established for the investment or the particular asset class, right? That's how I understand it, at least, and that's what I think we want to be sure to have clarity on, that this wasn't an idea that we're going to invite trustees and they're going to have a seat at the table in terms of hashing through managers and deciding what's best.
Well, I appreciate that clarification and sort of an added point that Trustee McDonald brought up that actually hadn't occurred to me is that, when he sits with staff, he gets an opportunity to kind of see how staff does it and see that they're going through it and making sure that they're doing a good job. And as he pointed out, he's been very impressed each time that he's walked away from one of these due diligence visits with how staff does it. And he's gained a level of comfort because of that. So I think that's a valuable objective as well.
Indeed. Jay, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah, thanks. Just a quick question about the implementation of the policy behind this language. Is it the intention that the investment staff will provide some kind of schedule as to what due diligence is upcoming? The query is I was hoping you could clarify how that back and forth actually happens.
Yeah, so I'll ask Tim to jump in after I make my comments as appropriate here as well. But search is identified or a review point is identified, and that kicks off a quiet period with the board. So through the notification of that quiet period, there will also come solicitation of interest for board members whether they want to participate. Tim, you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean that's current practice right now, and that's what we'll continue. Once we get far enough along in a research process where we think there's a high likelihood of going forward, we issue that quiet period notification, and that comes right before we launch into full-blown due diligence. So it fits with the process nicely as it stands today.
All
And
right.
I would just add that if the search process is going through Verisk, which occasionally it does, Verisk would have a similar, trigger point in their research process where we're getting to that due diligence point and quiet period would be issued for them as well.
Jay, did that address your question?
Yeah, I think that's fine. My concern here was really that the investment staff would find themselves in the position of providing kind of a schedule of the quarterly updates of all their meetings, of all their due diligence that's ongoing. Some of that they want to keep confidential. I think it sounds reasonable that the trustees can chime in at the quiet period. This would apply only for new strategies though, right? That ongoing review. I'm assuming the trustees know what's already in the plan, and if they wanted to chime in on something or sit in on something, then you could do so.
Yeah, I think the way we've done that in the past has been certainly if there's annual meetings that trustees are invited to, we agendize those. When there's existing travel with trustees, we typically try to bundle in some additional meetings to make the most of our travel dollars. I assume travel is coming back at some point in the near future here. I hope
Word.
that. And if there's a trustee who has a specific concern around a specific manager, always bring that up with us and we can schedule some type of review.
Let me just pile on here that the sort of the two basic scenarios that I see are the search for the manager within the asset class that we're pursuing, and then there's the existing managers who've fallen into the troubled area, the yellow zone, where there's a need for an on-site discussion, whether it's with respect to material employment changes or what have you, performance. So clearly there's a role for trustees in both. But I would suggest that with regard to the troubled manager scenario, that yes, we're observing, but we can also certainly form opinions about that as well that we can share, right? So I see them different in that regard.
Yeah, and I would just say that for the troubled manager scenario, we typically try to give trustees a heads up that a review is underway during staff comments. If there's a personnel change, an organizational change, that sort of thing. If there's a performance issue, that'll usually come up during the performance review process on a quarterly basis.
Got it. All right. Are there any other comments, questions, or observations of board members on this topic?
Yeah, Scott, I think I would feel more comfortable if the language said the CIO shall encourage board members to participate.
I'm trying to pull it back. What's the current, David?
CIO shall query board members as to their interest.
Okay.
Can I add something on this? And Scott's been very kind about not identifying the author, probably to protect the innocent. But
Or the guilty.
Or the guilty. This is my, it was my proposed language. I have, I have two thoughts on it. One is I have no problem with editing language, including especially my own. Picking up on first on what Scott said, it may be too strong to suggest using the words in participating in the due diligence process, as opposed to say something like observing the due diligence process. The language that I proposed here in participating in the due diligence process might suggest to someone that it means from beginning to end, that there has to be board member or a specific or several board members involvement through the entire process. That is probably more encompassing than I thought. If I could respond to David's thought, however, on the other side, I don't think it's reasonable to encourage board member involvement, because I just think there's going to be too many people that will feel the obligation to be involved when they really don't have any substantial interest in that particular item. So I'm okay with leaving it just asking the board members which ones are interested and including those who are, and if you see fit, changing it to observing the due diligence process as opposed to suggesting there has to be active participation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the policy goal was to not discourage involvement, right? That was really what got us off on this discussion a few weeks ago in terms of the reaction. So clearly under either language scenario, participation is encouraged. And I guess that starts with a sort of a query of board members as to their interest in a particular, manager selection. So I don't know, David, what your thought is on that, but I think our overarching goal is to not discourage, right? And so to what degree people can be involved or want to be involved is sort of it's more or less an individual trustee choice, I think, in that regard.
I would just like to see as many board members as possible participate in this activity. It just helps us to become educated on selection of managers, the process, and so forth.
Yes.
I mean, because it all comes to us for a vote in the end. And the more informed we are, the better. And so I don't want to browbeat board members into observing, but I think we should all be encouraged to kind of share the responsibility and learn about our money managers and the process on how we select them and what we're looking for, what we're trying to achieve investment-wise and so forth. I think it's very educational and makes us better board members.
Scott Whalen, thought on that? I saw your light go on.
I didn't mean to put my light on. I'm just listening intently.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can do paper, scissors, rock in terms of how to resolve it. I mean, I think we want to encourage, I think that we got started on this way back when just because it appeared, I understand it was not intended. It just appeared from the amendments to the statement that there was a message of potential discouragement to involvement coming through when in fact, at least after a lot of discussions with Tim and Scott Whalen, I've determined that's clearly not the case. It's really understanding what our role is in that process, particularly when it comes to new managers and the actual manager selection process versus the troubled manager scenario. So, I mean, Jerry, any strongly held view on, let's put it this way. Do we all agree that we think trustees should be generally encouraged to participate? I think the answer is yes, right? So maybe put generally in front of encouraged and let's call it good. Fair, Jerry?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. So is there ongoing concern about participating being too participatory?
And changing to observing from participating.
I'm trying to get back to your initial thoughts, Scott, about.
Right. I'm drawing that distinction because it was one that certainly came up in my discussions with both Tim and Scott about you know, how this plays out in real time. And I only had my own experience to base it on, which was being a tag along on several of these, participating in a couple that involved troubled managers, but, you know, otherwise observing. So, you know, there's a role and a place for us. And I think really with respect to the new manager scenario, it's all about observing and understanding how the sausage is made. Because as David points out, ultimately it comes to us for votes. We need to understand, you know, if we can and if time permits, what some of that looks like behind the curtain, right? It's just, it's really informative. So observe, yes.
Then perhaps it could have just a slight preamble. There's big problems in editing by committee. I've gone through this process before. So, you know, I'm not picking the words, but it somehow could have a slight preamble to suggest the board encourages involvement. The board encourages involvement in the due diligence process, and the CIO shall be required to do the following. And then soften that one to monitoring or observing as opposed to participating.
I think that sounds good, Scott and Tim. Does that sound like something you can rework? And
I think so.
All right.
See, I used to chair the editorial committee of the grand jury, and I used to tell people you cannot have pride of authorship in grand jury stuff. In fact, one of my suggestions was a lot of people don't know that there were originally 15 commandments, but when it came back from the editorial committee, there were only 10.
Yes.
Are you citing the Mel Brooks movie, Jerry? History of the World. Yeah, okay.
We steal often without attribution, David. All right. So we are we resolved on this? Any other thoughts or observations before we move on?
So in terms of next steps, I can certainly work the language. I think I have an understanding of the direction that you all are headed. Do I make that adjustment and bring it back one more time for board approval?
I would say yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay, great.
Scott, yes. May I make a quick comment here?
Sure.
Thank you. I think we have Harvey Lederman here also. If he could be made a panelist, he wanted to share his view from the fiduciary perspective about the differences between participation and observing due diligence.
Okay. I saw Harvey's picture. Where did he go? I lost him.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
I'm here. Thanks. I just wanted to add a comment, if I may, because I'm looking at the language, and I hadn't seen this before. It sounds like from your conversation that board members and Dr. McDonald kind of emphasize this. He finds that the being involved in the process is a good educational opportunity and gives some confidence in what staff is doing and a chance to learn about how to go about it. And that I would call that an observer kind of role, to be able to observe what's going on in the process. The suggested language about participating, however, gives me a little bit of pause, because participating means taking an active role. And it sounds like it would include, as staff is, for example, interviewing a manager candidate, that a board member would chime in and ask questions as well and satisfy themselves and be participating in that decision process. It didn't sound like that was what your intent was going to be. And my only concern is that if you're not going to clearly delegate that to staff, then you're going to own it as a fiduciary responsibility if you're participating in that process. And I want you to be careful that's, you know, if you want to do that, in for a penny, in for a pound, you're imposing a duty on yourself that otherwise I thought you had intended to delegate. If the word is observe, and Jerry Holcomb pointed this out, if the word is observe, I think that captures what your intent is. If you're going to go as far as be a participant in the process, then you're going to be taking on more of the fiduciary duty of prudence, and you're going to be held to the prudent expert standard in doing that. You just want to make sure you go into that eyes wide open.
Right. So on that point, I think the discussion came around to that with respect to manager selection.
Yeah.
In particular, that the board member role is as an observer. It's an observer of the process, and it's also a chance to observe our staff, right? How it actually happens, but we're not participating. Although the reasons you articulated weren't foremost in our mind at the time, the end result's the same. It's not participation. It's observing. That may be different in a troubled manager scenario, but that's a wholly different fiduciary matter as well, I think.
Harvey, a few times that I've been on these visits, and I've reviewed the material before our meeting, I've had some questions that have come up, and I talked to the investment team and let them know what my questions are before we go into the meeting, so that you know they I don't give any surprises to anybody. So and what the response has been from the team has been, well, yeah, that's a good question. You should ask it. And so, okay, so I do. Or other times they're like, nah, that's not necessarily relevant in this case. And so I go with the guidance from the team. But are you saying that we shouldn't ask any questions in these meetings? Or
I just... We're talking here about what's in the investment policy statement. And that lays out the respective duties, including the delegated duties to the staff. And I would just want to make sure that you're keeping clear lines of delegation as a policy statement. You know, what happens on the ground in a particular meeting, can you not say anything or something like that? That isn't as important. You'll work that out. That's just, you know, part of the conversation. I'm talking more from a policy standpoint. I want to make sure that you keep your delegation and responsibilities as clear as you possibly can make them, so that you don't take on a responsibility inadvertently.
I think we're clear on that, and the policy will reflect that we are observers with respect to manager selection. It is the role and function of the CIO and staff to undertake that.
This kind of reminds me of that old line about breakfast. The chicken is involved, but the pig is committed.
I can always count on you for at least one takeaway a day, Jerry. And that's today's takeaway.
That's the best I can do? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, it's a low bar today, apparently. All right. Have we rounded this out? Any other comments, questions, observations? Seeing none, got thumbs up. Scott, thank you. Tim, thank you on this item. And I think our next item is also Tim's, correct?
Well, the second half of this item is around staff authority on investment.
Oh, correct. I apologize.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite right. And so, so this one also came out of the last meeting, and it was around the amount of $250 million, increasing staff authority from $100 million to $250 million, and also redefining how that authority would be calculated. And so first I want to clear up, I think, just a little bit of confusion in terms of our description of that amount. And I remember Jerry had said that, you know, $250 million is a lot of money. If you make four investments, you're at $1 billion, right? And so that is looking at it in terms of the commitment amount. But that would never actually happen, because when you commit, as you guys all know, in these private markets investments, they draw capital slowly, they're giving you back capital, And then, you know, you make another commitment to another fund and they start drawing that slowly and giving it back. So there would never actually be that $250 million invested in that fund. Now, I just wanted to make that point of clarification before we start into the discussion. And the so what we did at the direction of the board was go back and dive deeper into that actual amount and what is needed. And we did that by working with your private markets advisor, having them model out different scenarios on commitment levels, commitment amounts, and the time frame over which those commitments would be drawn down and returned based on their funding models. So we got a better sense of how it would all work out, right? And as it turns out, this is in the back of the memo I showed, I pulled out three relevant examples of the 36 that we looked at, three relevant scenarios. And so when we start looking at the amounts, the authority amount, assuming that you're making $100 million every couple of years to the same manager, right? A new fund comes out, you make another $100 million commitment, a new fund comes out. That is the only time in the scenarios that you start bumping up against the commitment level of $150 million, right? Not 250, bringing it down to $150 million. And so, you know, every once in a while, you'll, under that scenario, the staff would have to come back to the board and say, hey, you know what, this is a pinch point. We can't make this commitment based on this authority level. We need to get your approval, which seems reasonable to me, right? Those were fairly conservative assumptions, and $150 million seemed reasonable using that calculation methodology. Now, as I was going through all this, it occurred to me that this calculation methodology seems sort of non-intuitive and confusing. And it seems like we could really simplify this, right? So the calculation methodology is you take the authority level and you subtract out the commitments less the unfunded amount. And you know, it's a calculation that can be easily done and shared with the board. But as I imagine the trustees are thinking through this, they're like, I don't even know what that means, right? So it seems much more reasonable and simple and could get you, you know, virtually all the way where you need to be if you just set a commitment amount and you say you can only commit, and I'm saying $125 million, looking at sort of the same set of assumptions and analysis that we got from Stepstone, $125 million per fund. And given the pace at which you're trying to grow this program and the frequency at which funds are made available for investment, $125 million per fund seems reasonable. That's more than the $100 million total commitment that you have today in the policy. It simplifies the calculation and, you know, should allow staff to get done what they need to get done.
Hey, Scott, can I ask you a couple questions?
Please.
So we're just talking about a cap on the authority just to move forward without the board's approval. Is that correct? Are you talking about limiting so much per fund with the concern of that if we go above that, then that could reduce our diversification?
No, you're correct. Moving forward without the board's approval.
Okay, so if we had a cap of like $100 million on authority to move forward, but the investment looked so appealing, that could always be brought back to the board to go above and beyond that, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, all right.
So on that latter point, David, what I've understood in terms of the dynamic without getting too into the weeds is that there are going to be investments, particularly in the private equity space or the private market space, that come with a relatively short fuse, And you know, that could be 3 weeks, 1 month, and a need to be able to be in a meeting situation and to provide an agreement in principle kind of commitment that is becoming more prevalent now than it used to be. And we have a greater, you know, allocation to the private markets now in our overall portfolio. So the question is going to be, and I guess this question is best put to Tim Price, which is that in terms of amounts, what makes practical sense based on your experience to date and what the current state of the markets are in terms of the kind of level ability you need to accomplish the majority of your transactions without being hampered or not being able to be at the table, I guess is what I'd ask.
Sure. Happy to address that. I would say that over the past couple of years, given where the asset allocation targets have been within the private equity space, we've been targeting somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 to $75 million per commitment has been the sweet spot. As we look forward to this new larger target allocation, that tends to migrate to 75 to 100. And we do see some scenarios that could go over $100 million in that space, where if we get the access to the right managers, or if we're able to grow into larger commitment sizes over a series of funds, we do see a couple of scenarios where, you know, we would be going north of $100 million there. So I think the 100 is kind of where things are at right now.
Right.
But over the next year to two, we do see some scenarios where if we're able to position ourselves in the right spot with the right manager, get our process done efficiently, quickly, we might be able to gain some larger allocations there that would be appropriately sized given the asset allocation targets that the board has approved.
And as to the scenarios that have been painted, the sort of the more complicated method and the simpler method, do you have a preference for either one? And on the simpler method, is 125 the right number?
I think, you know, we were, so much of this kind of depends on the path you take to get to a place. And I think the board had been more focused on aggregate level commitment across a general partner or a firm in the past. And so we'd had this more complicated structure. You know, sometimes inertia takes over and you try to work within the confines of the past policy. I think Scott's comment was, you know, when he brought it up, it makes a lot of sense. It's much simpler to understand from the trustee perspective. It's much simpler to manage from the staff perspective. I think 125 gives us breathing room for the next 3 years or so.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Just to pick a different number, I would be comfortable with 150, given that the initial suggestion was 250. So I think that gives you even a little bit more growth, just to throw out one other number. I don't want to make it a bidding war, but.
175, anybody, 175? All right, so we posited a couple of different numbers. We got 125 and 150, but it sounds like, at least from the standpoint of operational ability, the simplified method works well or better for you. Is that fair?
You know, they both have their trade-offs, but I mean, either direction we can operate within, I think the management of a simple per fund or per strategy limit is probably the more intuitive approach. And when in doubt, why complicate things would be my metric there.
I'd go for 150.
Got a second for 150. Okay. Any other comments or observations on this? All right. So from a perspective of how this is agended, do we have an action item, or are you looking for direction, Scott?
So I'm not sure how it was agendized, but I would like as much direction as possible.
This is not an action item today. It is to provide direction for us to come back with a proposed revision to the IPS.
Well, let me ask this without being an action item. Is there anybody who has a strongly held view opposed to 150? Seeing none, I would say probably direction has been provided.
And just to be clear, I'm assuming that we're talking about 150 using the simple per fund, commitment per fund method.
Yes, that's my understanding based on the evaluation and our CIO's comment, yes.
Very good. That then concludes this agenda item as far as I'm concerned. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. And I think we know what we're going to do. All right.